I had intended today to speak about the spirituality of children and the child within each of us. That's what I put in the May newsletter for today. But on this Mother's Day, I'm haunted by an ongoing story of human cruelty to children. A few weeks ago, nearly 300 girl students at a school in northeastern Nigeria were kidnapped. Men from a violent rebel group known as Boko Haram entered the school, lied to lure the girls out of the school, and burned it down. Then they took them. Boko Haram is translated as Western education is forbidden. Haram is an Arabic word meaning forbidden. Females should not be educated, these men say, asserting their tradition and their perversion of the religion of Islam. The leaders plan to sell the children as wives and traffic them as sexual slaves. Yet theft is forbidden by Islam, like the theft of people from their families and burning their school. Sex outside of your own marriage is haram. So is killing. So is slavery. All forbidden. They defend their crimes as an expression of God's will. This makes me furious. The only reason they've kidnapped those girls is because they could get away with it. Violence has no reason. It makes its own reasons. Those girls have parents and grandparents and teachers who had wanted them to have a better life through learning and growth. And now the girls are gone, their parents desperate and bereft. I've been thinking about those girls. I've been inspired by the stories from a few of them who, as they rode in open trucks passing under tree branches, grabbed a branch, pulled themselves up out of the truck, and tumbled onto the ground so they could run to safety. I've been praying for them and praying for those who didn't escape. What is it they are being robbed of? What are those girls being denied? What spiritual things are common, no matter where we live and who we are? What does everyone deserve? Every child and the child within every one of us. I have a few things to mention. First is a sense of safety. For an infant, this feels like not being hungry or cold or alone for too long. As a baby, our crying alerts those who care for us, and their meeting our needs can build a sense of safety. As we grow, we need to know that we have a safety net so we can take risks, stretch ourselves, and learn by making mistakes. As we age, we need to take responsibility and feel the tension of risk. But we need to know we have backup. If we are lucky, our backup, our safety net, is made up of our families, teachers and schools, our congregations, and other forms of community. For countless generations, many people have found safety and expressed their trust in the care of the divine, a sense of some larger love that will never let us go, no matter what. Some who have come through ordeals of assault, abduction, or abandonment have claimed that it was trust in their God that brought them through. Others made it through by keeping their mental focus on the faces of those who mattered in their lives. Others kept their mind stayed on their sense of purpose. What gives life meaning? What do you want to survive this for, rather than giving up? Because you have a duty or a goal to pursue. All of these are spiritual matters. What helps you get through is a spiritual question. Matters of survival are spiritual matters. In addition to safety, we want a sense of belonging and closeness. The spirit is nourished by physical closeness with others and by simply spending time together. Kids know this and long for it. I think we still do, whatever age we are. I remember my own longing for it in childhood. I was born when my parents were older, and my brother was nearly out of the house. They were busy, distracted, and not very happy. I longed for more contact than I got, real contact, not only time in the same house or time spent while shopping. We were moderate, church-going Protestants. But we had no rituals at home, no bedtime prayers or grace before dinner. We had few conversations together over a meal at the table to reconnect after the day. As a boy, one Saturday, I got my father to sit by me in his recliner and read me the Bible aloud. How could he refuse such a pious request? The book of Genesis, I think it was, the King James translation, so I'm not sure what it was about. It was tedious. But for half an hour, I had the physical contact of my dad squeezing the chair with me. I felt the vibrations of his voice and heard the sound of his voice just for me. My mom and I went to church by ourselves. We sat side by side in a wooden pew, the middle one on the right side on the aisle edge. We sat in prayer together and heard the sermon and had communion together once I was old enough to receive it. Every week I saw her put a check in the offering basket, $20, a lot of money in the 70s. This got my attention. I learned habits of stewardship and giving to charity from watching her. We sang hymns together. In one hymn, she pointed out in the book that to stay in the meter of the song, you need to sing the word pierced as two syllables, as in Christ's pierced feet. And she smiled. Sometimes we got the giggles about something silly in the sermon or the people in front of us. And we'd sit there shaking, stifling laughter. Counting the drive to and from church, that hour and a half on Sunday was the longest time in quiet presence that I spent with my mom every week. Kids will seek ways to be together with others. But at any age, we long for a sense of closeness and belonging. We want to be seen and heard, known and understood. It can seem that Facebook and other aspects of the online world link us with more people, more belonging. And to be sure, it could be a life-saving way of connecting. But it may also distract us from closeness. So much time online has reduced the amount of real time we can spend getting to know other people. Up close with more depth, or being with those we care about in person, or hearing their voice on the phone. The voice conveys our spirit and our emotion. Now and then, one of my Facebook friends will announce that they are taking a break, going offline for a time. Instead of always being on, reading every post as it goes up and posting what they are doing or thinking, they are practicing an online Sabbath. This is a chance to remember that sitting side by side or facing another person across a table in a kitchen or a coffee shop shows caring and connection. It provides reassurance. Kids long to be seen and known like this. I think we all do. We long for connection to others and to life and to the mystery behind life. In her book, The Gift of Faith, Tending the Spiritual Lives of Children, UU minister and grandmother Jean Nuwar says that children are inherently spiritual. There's nothing we need to pour into them, no switch to turn or process to control. We need only pay attention and respond with openness. With kids, at times we need to act as if some things are not a big deal. At other times, we must understand that everything is a big deal. Nuwar says that kids are natural mystics. For example, they can become totally absorbed in the progress of a caterpillar or the movement of the clouds, losing all sense of themselves. In the words of Shel Silverstein, "Once I spoke the language of the flowers. Once I understood each word the caterpillar said." Observing teenagers, Nuwar says they can lose themselves in music and in dance, blending into the rhythm, feeling one with all that is. Kids know how to be in the flow. The child within us still can remember that impulse, can learn again how to be absorbed, how to lose oneself. I think. Personally, I can feel awkward about showing such freedom, losing myself, perhaps more than many others do. So I make sure to hang around with kids and with my elders. I talk and listen to them. They remind me about the flow. There is no good reason for this to stop at any age or stage of life. All of us long for connection to life and the mystery behind it. Reverend Nuwar says kids are natural theologians, too. We need not fear conversations with them about spiritual terms and ideas. Even in our awkwardness or discomfort, we can try to stay open and curious. After all, if we have a kid in our life, it's likely we've already made the hardest spiritual commitment. You parents and educators, Tracy Springberry and Sarah Conover write that a commitment to children in our lives will throw us onto the path toward spiritual wisdom. And it's not an easy path. In their book, Chaos, Wonder, and the Spiritual Adventure of Parenting, they write, "The spiritual is felt, touched, and communicated daily as the tone and color of our lives together. We hear, taste, breathe, and touch the spiritual through the ways we attend to countless sunrises, meals, celebrations, frustrations, grief, joys, laughter, and responsibilities. We feel the press of the spirit in the disparity, the gap between the path we hope to walk, full of kindness, love, and forgiveness, and the path we actually walk. Sometimes parents of young children will start coming to church because their kids are asking questions about faith and spirituality. God, heaven, death, why the grass is green and the sky is blue. Why are some people mean, unfair, or cruel? After attending services a while for the children, the parents may find that they are the ones who need spiritual depth and refreshment, discovery and reflection. Many parents and grandparents have told me that they seek practices to center themselves and find peace. And they seek extra time in the day to do those practices. African-American poet Lucille Clifton took a question from the audience once after she gave a reading. "Why are your poems always short?" Ms. Clifton replied, "I have 6 children and a memory that can hold about 20 lines until the end of day." When we adults care for our own spiritual health and show the fruits of that care, we are teaching children about spiritual practice, about ease and compassion, generosity and joy. It's a win-win We are better, and kids learn how to live a more open and rich life. When we engage in spiritual conversations and rituals of connection together, adults and children feel a sense of belonging, closeness, and safety. Nobody is an ideal parent, just as nobody is a perfect child or a perfect adult. Even Jean Nuwar, the minister who wrote the books on the spirituality of children, says, "I wish I had done better." This is important for parents and the rest of us to learn and live by. Not perfect, not having final answers, sometimes not having any answers, just the gift of our presence and attention. Not perfect, but working to be open and brave. Trying to be mindful. This is a good lesson for the kids around us to see and learn, and for the child within you to relearn and live. We are here to support one another in this. Perhaps you'll talk with one another after the service about your longings for the children around us and for the child within you. The last kind of longing I want to mention is this one. In this fragile world of ours, where children are kidnapped, we long for compassion and healing. I pray those young girl students are remembering the faces of their families and faith communities and their teachers. I pray that they are somehow trusting in a larger love and looking for a way to escape and run to safety. In this fragile world, we try to help. We long for hope. The second principle of our UU denomination is that we affirm and promote justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. We have a kids' version of this principle in our Spirit Play class. In the list of rainbow promises, O for orange means offer fair and kind treatment to others. The phrasing is great, says Reverend Nuwar, but only as a starting place. As parents and as a congregation, she says, we seek to move to the richer concepts of empathy and compassion, to the challenge of justice and social equity. Just as we can delight in challenging our children and ourselves to grow in other skills, she says, we can delight in stretching one another toward more compassion, toward putting our values into practice. Nuwar cites a story about a conversation that a mother had with her 4-year-old, Meredith. Meredith asked, "Mama, if God made the world, who made God?" Nuwar calls this a classic theological mind twister, a familiar one to seminary graduates. The mother said, "What a great question." Such encouragement was a good thing, but the mom was really stalling for time. "Well, who do you think made God, Meredith?" Another question showing openness and curiosity, and another stalling tactic. Meredith answered right away, as if the answer was completely obvious and she was just checking. She said, "God's mother made God." Her name is Hope. We do not have to deny kids access to spiritual words. They will find them on their own. Instead, we can guide the discussion to reflect our values. The word God, for example, brings up many feelings and images. In this world, there are many perverted understandings of the word God and cruelty done in the name of God. Likewise, in the world are many perverted understandings of the word love. and many cruelties done in the name of love. We can learn otherwise and live otherwise. We can take responsibility for the care of the children in our midst and the child inside our own heart. And we can make room in our heart for every child of the human family. We can grow our compassion and empathy, generosity and courage. Grow to be a force for healing in the world. Whatever our age or stage of life, may we live in compassion and hope. So may we live in compassion and hope. So may it be. Blessed be. And amen.